the circle all through, trying to get various nations to let them land. The nations are getting a little bit more edgy about allowing any hijacker to land anywhere. They tried to land in Libya, they tried to land in various parts of the Mediterranean. The one place they could have landed was Syria, but they would not because of their Mohammedan religious opiate poison that didn't want them to go to Syria, where Syria offered them sanctuary. Syria is in a strong alliance with the Soviet Union, and these two that are now sentenced to hang did not like communism. It was the incident which led to the abortive Egyptian attack, you know, the commando raid on Larnaca Airport in Nicosia, Cyprus, and caused the Cypriots to break relations with Egypt. They killed all the Egyptians who tried to come in and take the two away. But they were found guilty yesterday of the February 18th murder of Mr. Yosef Sabai, editor of Al Aram newspaper chain, and they were Samir Mohammed Kadar, 28, and Sayyid Hussein Ali, 26. The 28 and 26-year-old are set to date, and as of this date, their execution date of June 1 will be the time that they will be hung by the neck until dead. It was set by Mr. Justice Dimitriadis, president of the three-man special assizes, who said the motive for murder was that Mr. Sibal was held to have harmed the Palestinian liberation cause. The defense said it would appeal, but much pressure is being brought on Cyprus. However, the Cypriots have said that if U.S. continues with its aiding of Turkey, which is now doing, Turkey's in an outbreak, you know, of malaria, the world's worst in 100 years, but the USA again is giving military aid to the reactionary fascist regime of Turkey, and the Cypriots say they may commute the sentence if the United States continues to give this kind of support to the fascist nation of Turkey. Look that up on your map, too. It's just above Lebanon, and you'll see it reaching out into the Mediterranean. Release all communist prisoners was the last order of the day from Rome, Italy. The leftist kidnappers of former Premier Aldo Moro, Prime Minister of Italy, last night demanded the release of all communist and socialist prisoners immediately, and a letter apparently written by their captive called for a prisoner exchange. Already they have sent one ear of Prime Minister Moro to show that the Red Brigade means business against the fascist terror shown by the police and courts in Italy. It has been sold out, as you know, from yesterday's news commentary by myself, by the Communist Party of Italy, who has broken away from the great Soviet Comintern-Warsaw Pact line and have developed what we hear an independent Euro-communism and have actually adopted capitalistic perspectives and capitalist goals, and even have called for uniting with the AFL-CIO and have pulled away from the Workers' Federation Trade Unions of the World, which is socialist or Marxist-oriented. The Prime Minister Andreotti told Parliament that he rejected any form of blackmail by the Red Brigades, we should say white male, guerrillas who abducted the 59-year-old Prime Minister on March 16th and killed his 5 guards. Said it is with much regret that he will have to see the Prime Minister die. That's how little they take care of their own. That's the difference that you have here in this great communist confederation. I won't let one of you go. We pledge all of our lives to your safety. If they come for one, they must come for all. We have 1,000 lives guaranteeing that you will eat, 1,000 lives and better guaranteeing free medical care, or surgery if necessary, until I did the miraculous healing of Isaac Edwards, prepared to pay $25,000 for surgery, for consultations, to fly him to the best surgeon, neurosurgeon, neurologist in the world. That's the protection you have. But capitalists have no protection. Here he is, the Prime Minister, and his successor, Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti, who has even formed an alliance with communists, who have sold out the great communist goals of the Soviet Union and broken away from the Soviet alliance. He will not give any of these demands. He will not release one socialist communist that has been imprisoned for nothing more than political reasons. He will not drop. He will not see that the trial in Turin, Italy, that's just a facade, an absolute political trial. He will not see that that is dropped. He will give no demand, he said is sorry and regretful to the family of Prime Minister Aldo Moro that he must die, but he cannot meet their concessions. They don't even take care of their own. Here's the top dog of the capitalists, and they're going to let him die rather than be decent and release any socialist or communist from prison. He said, we have many times declared that one of our fundamental aims is the liberation of all communist prisoners and the destruction of concentration camps, said the Red Brigade. The Red Brigade statement released in Rome and Milan said that these fundamental aims of the liberation of all working class prisoners and the destruction of concentration camps that the national police have set up are our basic demand. And if you do not meet them, we will kill the fascist renegade that used, it was Aldo Moro that for the ruling class, the prime minister that they have kidnapped who set up these concentration camps and imprisoned these socialists, and yet the industrial military class that used him to carry out their nefarious works and schemes against the working class will not lift a finger to save their own chief advocate and their best servant and the most important, powerful man in Italy, the prime minister, Moro. But he's not to be saved. They will not release one socialist or communist. And the Red Brigade sounds like they do mean business, that he will die unless something is done. Stand by. Brazil has rejected, Brazil, South America, the rich nation to our south, has rejected the overtures of the United States to draw closer economically to USA. This is considered, in brief, world brief, a great breakthrough for the forces of liberation in the third world. It means that we will not be bothered, at least, by the danger of the big nation from the south. Brazil, mineral rich, untapped, is larger than the United States by, again, the state of the size of Texas, twice. That's how big a country just Brazil is. So you know how vast and rich and big a continent we live on. A new Trans-Siberian rail link. The Soviet Union are plunging into a 3,200-mile Baikal-Amur Railway, which will open up a vast expanse of territory and give access, according to the Guyana Chronicle, the organ of the People's National Congress, the ruling party of our country. It will give the Soviet Union access to valuable mineral reserves and has been dubbed Russia's construction project and the world's most fantastic construction project of the century. It will be completed by 1980. 3,200-mile railway system, the most modern type in the world. Just one of the Soviet Union's great projects of the future, and shows the power of what the people's system. Soviet means a council of the people governing. 80,000 Soviet workers are building the 3,200-mile-long Trans-Siberian Railway, which will open up these vast territories and give access to the rich minerals that have never been touched in oil. The Soviet Union is vastly rich, nearly three times the size of the United States. The line begins at Ust-Kut in the Irkutsk region, crosses Lake Baikal, and by early 1980 will have reached the far eastern city of Komsomolsk to link with an existing link or the line to the Pacific port of Soviet Haven. This article reports on the progress of the Baikal-Amur Railway. Komsomolsk is the point of which it will reach on the Pacific, all the way from Poland, through Moscow, Sverdlovsk, Omsk, Novosibirsk, Tashkent, Ust-Kut, Nizhensk, and Chara, and Tinda, and Ugal, and then finally to Komsomolsk, the seaport, large, beautiful seaport that looks almost like San Francisco on the Pacific Ocean just above Japan, so you can find in your map. From Moscow alone, it stretches 3,200 miles. That's how far it is. You're in a vast, vast region. You can cross the United States in about the whole of the United States in about 3,000 miles, or less than 3,000 miles. Stand by. That's the primary coverage of the news. I do want you to strongly consider our important stance on thievery. All of the people will listen to it again at the news time before the people's rally. you are to read very closely, listen very closely to this news, and digest it, because you'll be tested on the message about agriculture, the message about gas energy, the message about stealing, the new ethics, and the way that we will have implementing the same. A freak storm hits Western Australia, killing several hundred people. They do not know how many people are dead. Caused widespread blackouts, bushfires, and severe property and crop damage. Said the weather is nothing like it used to be. The Army was called in to help fight more than 300 bushfires, which have isolated four towns in the southwest of the state, the worst hit area in the history of Australia, south of Perth, which was encircled by fires as evacuations began. There are fears for the safety of, as I said, hundreds and hundreds of people living in scores of shacks, communes, and abandoned farmhouses deep in the forest country, as Australia also is ridden with poverty. All immigrants in New Zealand have been ordered out of the country forthwith. Within a matter of 3 weeks, all immigrants are to be removed from New Zealand. There's a war throughout the world against immigrants. Here we're fortunate to be in a land where we are popularized and wanted. Immigrants are sought actively, the only nation left on earth in which that is so, because of crowding, overcrowding, ecologies, ecosystems that will not support the people. But here we have only a nation of 800,000, mostly around the coastal region, leaving 97% of the entire region of this great nation, the size of Wisconsin and Minnesota, untouched. And many not liking socialism are fleeing. So they're actively pursuing more people to settle. So we are accepted. We have a place of acceptance. The United States is calling for the removal of all people, particularly blacks and Indians. So is England. They're actively pursuing the course and want to have their immigrant black Indian population, Asian population removed in 6 months. The same policy is being pursued in Canada. Racism is running rampant through Europe, as Germany, Switzerland, and France are all seeking the active removal even of people from lower Europe, because the so-called lighter-skinned Europeans are prejudiced against the Spanish, the Italian, and the Greeks. That's the kind of racism. There's always a pecking order, a horrible, horrible pecking order. Mr. Heinz Langer, the ambassador of the German Democratic Communist Republic to Guyana, arrived in this country yesterday for discussions with the Guyanese government. Ambassador Langer, who was accredited to Guyana in 1975 and is based in the Caribbean, in Cuba, is likely to be in the country for several days. We ought to seek out also the East German Democratic Republic. It's one of the most flourishing communist nations in the world, and the most flourishing in terms of employment and industrial output of any nation on earth, and we should make that one of the lists of invitations. The more we secure our friendship, bonding, eternal bonds of solidarity and alliance with the communist nations of the world, the more we guarantee our freedom of existence. Yet our greatest key is our own solidarity, refusal to be moved, a pledge of blood loyalty to each of us. United we stand, and divided we will not fall. We cannot be hurt from without, only from within. That's why all measures of security suggestions should be given, so that we can increase every phase of our security. Remember, the People's Rally must begin it promptly at 7:30 this evening. The Patriotic Front has discussed the latest Western peace moves, and we're willing to sit down and discuss. But today, as I told you, the Ian Smith fascist regime of Rhodesia or Zimbabwe refuses to discuss any kind of joint settlement with Mr. Robert Mugabe or Joshua Nkoma, head of the true liberation forces that represent the people. 3-1 are in the camp of the Patriotic Front that are heralded and led by Joshua Nkoma and Robert Mugabe. Most significant news of the day is that it has been made public by the Secretary of State Vance. The Soviets have satellite killers, some kind of advanced technology of which Secretary Vance said, "I'm speechless to even discuss the awesomeness of its power." Moreover, another great breakthrough for liberation was that one of the regions that was actually a part of the territory of Union of South Africa, Transkei, look it up on your map, has broken away and declared itself completely independent, though it's landlocked, and will not, it said, subdue itself anymore, subject itself to the will or whim of Union of South Africa, even if it meant the death of their state. A great breakthrough. Transkei, one of the regions, territories of the Union of South Africa, the dreaded fascist apartheid regime run by the big corporations of the United States, in which our people live in virtual concentration camps, this black region, this entire territory of Transkei, has broken away heroically from the Union of South Africa. And for that we are indeed thankful and our hearts rejoice. Again, we say we want you to take into consideration all types of music. Take note of the message on music. The United States has called for an earlier conference in the summer than had been originally planned for the fall in Bonn to discuss the IMF emergency and the economic emergency that exists in the capitalist nations. Japan did talk a little more softened today about the possibility of lowering their tariff barriers because Japanese, of course, export more than they import, so they have a favorable balance of trade. USA is in economic real dire emergency because the United States is now having to import more than it can export. It has to buy more than it sells. That means for danger, absolute danger. The IMF takes in Saudi and Iranian currencies today. The International Monetary Fund has included the currencies of two major oil-producing nations, Saudi Arabia and Iran, in the making up of its internal accounting unit, the Special Drawing Right, SDR. The change reflected their greatly enhanced position in world trade after the large oil price increases of 1974. The value of the SDR is determined by weighing a so-called basket of 16 currencies in terms of their proportion of world trade. To make way for Saudi Arabia and Iran, the International Monetary Fund dropped the South African rand and the Danish crown from the basket because their relative world trading positions have declined since it was introduced on July 1, 1974. Union of South Africa is in real trouble. Their money is becoming of no value in the capitalist economic order. The Saudi Arabian rial was weighed at 3% of the SDR valuation and the Iranian rial at 2%. The International Monetary Fund also announced some changes in the weighing of other currencies in the basket, with Britain's share dropping from 9 to 7%, and the shares of Canada and Italy falling from 6 to 5%. The United States and West Germany retained their top positions of 33% and 12.5% respectively. The United States still holds the highest value in currency by mutual consent of the reactionary capitalists, monopoly capitalists, who are trying to shore up U.S. currency because they say if U.S. currency goes down anymore, it will mean total chaos for all of the International Monetary Fund capitalist supporters. Sweden's share was cut from 2.5% to 1%, but the Belgian proportion went up from 3.5% to 4%, and the Austrian share from 1.5% down to 1%. Sweden, of course, has been moving more and more to a socialist position, and that is disturbing the IMF and the OECD that controls the economic health, you might say, illness of the capitalist countries today. Guyana is making a great push for high blood pressure control, having one of the lower blood pressure problems general of the norms of the world. They still, on concern for World Health Day, are observing a crash project to test everyone in Georgetown's high blood pressure, or testing them for hypertension or high blood pressure. This year, the health problem in the spotlight all over the world is high blood pressure, and the slogan is down with it. In Guyana today, as elsewhere, high blood pressure is becoming, at least, an important concern. It is not the cause of death and disability that exists in the Northern Hemisphere, in the colder regions and the tents driving competition of such fascist monopoly capitalist states as USA, but it is becoming a problem. In addition, high blood pressure also increases the risks of strokes, heart, kidney diseases, as well as, they think, cancer is triggered by the additional pressure of the blood. As blood pressure goes up, life expectancy goes down by years. One of the most disturbing aspects of high blood pressure is the fact that it generally presents no symptoms in its early stages and is commonly believed by most people to be no problem. A person may feel good, look good, and still have very high blood pressure and not be aware that he or she has the disease. We are grateful that over 100 people that have come here have seen their blood pressure go down from a high-risk stroke region to a high-risk heart attack region to normalcy. That's one of the fringe benefits of being in this lovely project of our own. Jonestown, as Diane so beautifully changed the song, Beautiful Jonestown. That's why we're here, to protect this land, our land of freedom, a land that we can see is ours to produce and protect 30 miles round. No higher purpose have we come to. It would be a good place to build for the future, or every day be prepared to make a last stand to guarantee that we will have life, liberty, guaranteed medical care, food, housing, protection, security for all of our children and all of our seniors. Thank you and all my love. I love you more, as I say so often, than you'll ever begin to know. You can never dream how much I love you.
Pretty much the circumstances of that a few minutes ago. From the South, managed to prevent a Homestead Act from going into effect until 1860. The last time they were able to stop it was 1860. But again, they were afraid that the Homestead Act would simply create more free territories. Of course, that's true. Let's stop here and take 20 minutes. You know, the popularity. So the number of abolitionists really wasn't all that great, but their incessant propaganda hardened the attitudes of both sides. And this is the important thing about slavery and anti-slavery agitation. It's not so that so many people were abolitionists, it's simply that incessant propaganda, particularly in the 1850s, polarized feelings in both sections of the country, hardened those feelings, and certainly awakened the North. As they say, many people in the North were not that concerned with slavery. They did object to it, for example, in Washington, D.C. Yes, they did eventually move public opinion in the North towards being opposed to slavery, although they were never part of war. And closely associated with anti-slavery agitation, you might even lump it in under that topic, was the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. This was the first part of the compromise to fall apart. I want to talk about the law, some of the characteristics of the law here in a couple of minutes, and you can see it by so many people who want to protect you. Now, under the terms of the law, the courts were allowed to appoint what were called special commissioners. Okay, so if an individual was pursuing a slave, or as they used to phrase it in those days, a fugitive from labor, he could go to this commissioner and ask for what was in essence an arrest warrant. And that gave the claimant, if you will, the right to seize and return someone who was asserted to be a runaway slave back to whatever state they were going to. Okay. Problem. I think the technical mentions at least one of these. The commissioner would hold a special hearing at which a claimant would assert his right to a given person as being a slave. If the commissioner issued the certificate, he got a $10 fee. If he did not issue the certificate, he would have $5. So you can see that there was a fairly substantial economic encouragement or do so to issue certificates, because if you issue it, you got twice as much money as you did. The difference between $5 and some money today, back in those days, that was a fairly healthy chunk of money. Further, anyone who was asserted to be an accused, you had no right to testify in any way. So they had no right to defend themselves or testify on their own behalf. And this is also true of individuals who claimed to be a freedman. And there were a lot of free Negroes in the North who were bagged by slave hunters and returned south, simply because they were never given the opportunity to defend themselves. So the law was very, very common for these reasons, plus a couple of others to point out in the law. Okay, so any fugitive did not have the right to testify on his own behalf, even if they claimed to be free. Further, federal marshals who were charged with enforcing the law were under heavy fine if they refused to carry out the law. Serve the arrest warrants. And they were also liable for the full value of the fugitive if they escape custody. So if the fugitive escaped, then the federal marshal was subject to paying the full value or surrogate value for that individual, which could run to $1,200. In fact, in those days, it was a whole big sum. And the same thing was true of any civilian, any member of the public, if you will, that interfered with the arrest process or aided in the escape of a fugitive. They also were subject not only to imprisonment, but very heavy fine. So the fugitive escape act was very unpopular, and it was in effect nullified in the northern states by what were called personal liberty law. Personal liberty laws were passed in every northern state, and they had the effect of, for practical purposes, nullifying the Fugitive Slave Act. Certainly nullifying its effect. Typically, the personal liberty law would forbid the use of local facilities to house captured fugitives. That means state or local jails in Canada. So if a fugitive was apprehended, then they would have to be housed in a Liberty State or a hotel or someplace. Forbidden to use the state or local jails and prisons. And state officials, and that includes local, state and local officials were forbidden from cooperating in the capture of runaway slaves. So by denying the use of local facilities and forbidding local officials' cooperation, personal liberty laws virtually nullify the Fugitive Slave Act. Very much along the lines suggested by Douglas in his debates with Lincoln, which they may have most of the period. Now, one of the little quirks of American history, in 1858, the Supreme Court declared Wisconsin's personal liberty law unconstitutional. And this, for the very obvious reason, virtually nullified a federal law. That is unconstitutional. Remember, there's a clash between the federal and state law, why the federal law just dominates. The court to this situation is that the Wisconsin legislature responded by denying the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, declaring the Fugitive Slave Act unconstitutional, and therefore null and void. So Wisconsin was simply doing essentially the same thing that South Carolina did back in 1832, and what Southern politicians have argued that states could do, and declare a federal law null and void within the borders of the state. And so Southern politicians were forced into attacking a decision of the Supreme Court, which actually favored the South, and in supporting Wisconsin's actions, which were actually detrimental to the South. So they were caught between philosophical belief and practicality, and between a rock and a hard place, so to speak. And from a philosophical point of view, they were thus forced to support Wisconsin's action, even though that, from a practical point of view, was damaging to the Southern position. Now, a couple other things that I want to mention along these lines, as far as this was not directly a cause of bad relations between the North and the South, but one of the reasons why they were never able to open it, and that was simply the political leaders of the 1850s during that decade were much more sectional in their orientation and less nationalistic. The old nationalists were dead or retired. Webster, Clay, Thomas Hart Benton, who we haven't talked about here particularly, but who was also a very prominent nationalist through the 20s, 30s, 40s. Those people who had been compromised during critical periods before were gone. So they were replaced by a new set of individuals who arranged to get all of the gay set, just a couple to talk about. But the basic point is they had developed, grown up during the sexual conflict, and they were much more radical in their point of view, much less prone towards compromising than had been earlier. And finally, of course, for the 87th time, the single issue which did more to bring on the Civil War and break up the Union, the question of slavery expansion in the territories. That was never settled. Certainly was not settled on the compromise made in the 5th. It was muted briefly, but the issue was never settled until actually the Civil War came along. As I think I mentioned to you before, virtually everything that happened during the 1850s, every major issue, no matter what it was, somehow rooted itself in the question of slavery expansion. Now, the issue which brings the period of tranquility to the rough end that I mentioned to you a few minutes ago was the introduction of the Kansas-Nebraska Act. Before we did that, are there any questions or comments about the Kansas-Nebraska Act then introduced in January of 1854 by Stephen Douglas. And to put it mildly, it revived the controversy over slavery expansion and would not be silenced until the Civil War. So once the slavery expansion question reemerged in 1854, it never again was renewed. Now this was a very simple bill. It would organize two territories under the names Kansas and Nebraska. Take too much to that out. And it would apply the principle of popular sovereignty. Both areas. And would also declare the Missouri Compromise to be peaceful. Now, in explaining the bill, Paul Douglas, who opened up the can of worms never even while in revision, Douglas argued that the Compromise of 1850 had made the Missouri Compromise obsolete. That by the Compromise of 1850, Congress had in effect abandoned its efforts to either prevent or protect slavery in the territories. But he's arguing that by the terms of the Compromise of 1850, Congress had essentially removed itself from that particular issue. So it was only consistent, he argued, that popular sovereignty should be applied to other areas of the Louisiana Purchase, that is, those areas which had not been organized as states yet. By the terms of the Compromise, Congress had abandoned the effort to either prevent or encourage slavery in the territory of Oregon, I think that would have come to mind, and so the logical thing to do was take the rest of the Louisiana Purchase and apply Ponderosa Armory there. Now, that's a public exit. There are at least two reasons that he didn't talk about publicly, particularly, which were very prominent in Douglas's thinking. And one of them has to do with the old two-thirds rule that meant to Douglas certainly had presidential ambitions, there's no question about this. In order to gain the nomination, he had to have Southern support. So, when he introduced the Kansas-Nebraska Act, he quietly suggested to Jefferson Davis and other Southern politicians that since Kansas had a common border with Missouri, that most of the settlers moving to Kansas would probably be pro-slavery in their orientation, and Kansas would probably come into the Union as a slave state. His idea here being that by encouraging the development of a slave state, this would bring Southern politicians to support him. And the 1856 Democratic Convention. And he was quite right at this point. The South, Southern politicians very supportive of this measure and did bring up with the type of support that he would, at least at this point in time. And beyond that, Douglas was deep into railroads. There was a severe competition about construction of a railroad. There were three routes, a northern, a central, a southern. Okay, now, the central route would have its terminus in Chicago. Just so happened that Douglas owned some real estate in Chicago. Well, I don't think it would take too long to figure out that the only transcontinental railroad had its eastern terminus in Chicago, but that would have at least a mild impact on real estate prices. Right? Yeah. The big drawback, if you want to use that term, to the Central Railroad route was it had to run through what was, up until the introduction of this bill, unorganized Indian territory. So the territory was not under the control of the stable government, it was unsurveyed. And so this was one of the severest criticisms of the Central Route. By organizing each area then as a territory, the Central Route became much more viable alternative than it was before then. So Douglas then had at least three reasons for supporting the bill. And I would also point out that there are textual mentions and not. He didn't really have any strong feelings on slavery one way or the other. He wasn't moralistic in that sense. He tended to look at slavery as being archaic economically unsound, but he didn't have any deep moral commitments on the issue of limiting the state. So he didn't really understand what he was building up here. But the Kansas-Nebraska Act occasioned a debate that was even more bitter than the one of 1850. And it helped to fragment the parties a little bit more. So Southern politicians, regardless of party, unanimously for the bill. This means Southern Democrats, Southern Whigs. And Northern Whigs unanimously against it. Wouldn't take too much time to do that. And then Northern Democrats split about even. So the roar of protests, quite as surprising as that was, and one which was extremely damaging to his political career.